Hi, I'm Bojan Jukic, and today I'm your host of the Wunder Mobility Podcast. Welcome everybody back to the Wunder Mobility Podcast. Today with a very, very interesting guest, especially nowadays where we hear so much in the news about autonomous driving, driverless technologies out there. Thomas, co-founder and CEO of VEI, is joining us today for the podcast episode.
Hi, everyone. Very nice to be on the show here.
Great that you're here. So Thomas has actually a very interesting background. He has a technical background. He studied industrial engineering in Germany, then went to the US, studied their computer science, spent some time in the Silicon Valley with Amazon and also at Zox with autonomous driving. And then in 2018, he decided to come back to Europe, to Berlin, and found VEI. Thomas, can you tell us a bit more about VEI and especially your interesting story? I think in the meanwhile, you fundraised already 100 million plus in this sector, so it would be cool to hear more about this company.
Yeah, thanks, Bojan, for or the brief background on myself. We started VEI now about 6 years ago. I was working, as you mentioned, at Zoox, one of the leading robotaxi companies back then, you know, and I would say to some degree still today, it is always 3 years out. Right? It's like when I joined Zoox, it was like in 2020, we would have self-driving cars everywhere in San Francisco. Now, obviously, that didn't turn out to be true. And every year it shifted by a year. So it was always another year out. So what we decided to do is just a contrarian approach, right? So robotaxis that we have today, from my perspective, all came out from one kind of engineering bubble out of Stanford, you know, with Sebastian Thrun, actually a German entrepreneur. Then went to Google, started Google X, then Waymo, and then out of that spun Zoox, Aurora, and all the, you know, leading self-driving car companies. And they had all one approach, which is going from zero autonomy to basically 100% autonomy. So from 100% human to 0% human. And that just felt like a very hard technical problem to solve, right? If you think about, you know, design thinking and quick iterations and pragmatic approaches, back then, we were thinking, okay, what can we do different? And that's what we then decided to do, right? Myself, as well as my co-founder, decided to move back to Europe to start a completely contrarian approach, right? One that is, you know, much more trusted, actually, by the society and by the regulators, but also that just uses a complete different technology approach, and that is remote driving, right? So remote driving basically enables a remote driver to drive a vehicle from afar. So really think about someone sitting in front of a remote steering wheel, in front of monitors or displays, right? Three of them. And on these monitors, you see video streams from the vehicle that can be, you know, many, many kilometers away. And based on these video streams, the remote driver controls that vehicle in a one-to-one manner, right? So with a steering wheel, with gas and pedals and so forth, right? And yeah, that's the technology that we've developed now with over 150 people, close to 150 million in venture capital over the last 6 years. And yeah, we had this massive milestone in Germany where we became the first and only company in Europe and are, you know, still to date after, I think, you know, close to 2 years, the only company that was able to take out the safety driver on public streets in Europe to then shift focus. I am German, right? So I would say, unfortunately, for regulatory reasons, we shifted focus to now take that technology and commercialize this here in the US. I'm here in Las Vegas, where our offices are. And about now 12 months ago, we started our commercial service here, right? And you might ask, okay, so what is the benefit here of remote driving? Or what cool new services can you create here? And we did not do robotaxis that you might think about. So not like a competition to taxis or ride hailing. But what we actually decided to do is to create a complete new mobility category that we call driverless car sharing. So kind of the next generation car sharing or car rental, and how it works here, that you can download the VEI app here today in Las Vegas. You click a button and then an electric car comes to you remotely driven from, you know, one of our remote drivers. Then you get inside the vehicle, you start driving yourself as the customer, the remote driver goes out, you know, teleports into another vehicle you know, maybe on the other part of Las Vegas, but you as the customer basically continue to drive that car, similar to then a car rental. And then when you're done, you don't have to park the car because then a remote driver comes and park the car for you. So it's basically click a button, get a car. You don't have to walk to it and you don't have to park it. That's a new mobility category at about half the price compared to ride hailing, right? So it's very, very affordable. And half the price also, by the way, if robotaxis ever emerge, and hence creates a new way of getting from A to B. Our vision is to create a real alternative and to remember that's the company to have replaced private car ownership that comes with many problems of, having many parking spaces in cities, often not being electric. Our vehicles are electric, and we really see a world where we can help create very sustainable and livable, cities with this alternative on-demand mobility service. So that's what we created, and that's what we launched here over the last year, and that we're now very, very excited. We just had an announcement actually yesterday to invest further into the rollout here. So we're now going to go to 100 vehicles in Las Vegas. We just got a production site here where we can retrofit about 16 vehicles per week. And we're now going into a scaling phase just because we saw a very, very great uptick from customers, using our service. There's many users who've used it 50 times. Some of them have used it 100 times. They pay a lot for the service, over $20 per trip. So it's really exciting to see kind of the technology, but also the product demand coming together here in Las Vegas. And then now rolling out further here in Las Vegas. And then with that, obviously more cities to come here in the US, and hopefully also one city in Europe.
Cool. Wow. That's very impressive. It's actually very interesting that you try to understand the problem, why we're actually working on autonomous driving, and that you took a bit of a different approach and angle how to solve this problem. And it's really interesting. Probably just as a, there's so many follow-up questions, but probably the most one where I would like to start first with is this topic with Europe. So why you've actually decided to go to Berlin to found Way? Why am I asking that? Obviously, we see in the news, but in general, there's a lot of things happening at the moment in the US, in China. Europe, unfortunately, is not that much in the headlines in terms of big companies and pilots on the streets. Obviously, there are still a lot of companies. So it would be interesting to understand a bit better why you've decided to take this route and not, like many others, found it in Silicon Valley.
Yeah, no, I mean, I was over there, all my friends, not all, but a great group of my friends were and still are in the Silicon Valley. We decided to go back to Europe. That was always kind of our plan, to learn from the best. In the end, I spent 6 years in the Bay Area, but my goal was always to learn from the best entrepreneurship and, computer science, and then come back and start another company. It took a little longer because it was just so exciting in the Bay Area. My original plan was just to, go to school there, have some great time at Stanford, and then come back. Then I took a job, and it was just exciting time. At some point, I just decided, okay, that was the original goal. Let's just leave that job at Zoox, which was obviously at the time and still is a very exciting company. What I'm intrinsically motivated by is I am German. I'd love to see much, much more very ambitious deep tech companies coming out of Europe. I think it's so important for us, in particular these days, to be able to compete on, international levels, that we actually have, tech companies coming out of Europe. Otherwise, we would just, become a vacation destination for the Americans and the, Chinese tourists. It's a bit of an intrinsic motivation. That's why I decided to come back. I wouldn't never say that it was a wrong decision from a business perspective. I think it really enabled us to to get great talent, because we are really differentiated, right? A very ambitious and deep tech technology company. And we also got a lot of support from early stage VCs, right? I can't say whether we would have got the same in Silicon Valley, but, with a certain kind of background and ambition, I think you are able to get great initial capital in Europe. So I'm actually very excited about I would definitely say it was a good business decision also to come back. I'm seeing where we are today. Of course, it's a bit unfortunate that now I'm back in the US and, launching it here. I would have loved to already have it in Berlin and Hamburg. But I'm sure we'll get there. yeah, we just had to delay that a little bit. But yeah, that's the main reason why I went back.
What was actually the reason for the delay to launch in Europe? Can you give us a bit more insights kind of about the hurdles to launch such an operation in Europe, and when can we actually expect you here in such an operation?
I mean, if you look at regulatory landscapes, I think it's in general in Europe, Europe's approach is basically to regulate before, trying to understand what technology should do before you allow something on the streets. That has its benefits, but it also just comes down to that you have to know and, you know, define everything before, which in many cases you don't know how that looks like if you've never developed it, right? So how do you know the exact specifications if you haven't, you know, launched it yet? We ran into some challenges where everyone is very supportive, very, very supportive, in particular Hamburg. That's why we decided to go there. They really want us there. They see the benefits of the tech for the society. I think we tried everything we can to really push that technology forward. It's a bit of a systematic challenge that how these things get rolled out is kind of step by step, at least these new technologies, meaning that we say, okay, let's start. We have to start in this area. This area then is not only by the, you know, approved by the kind of the mobility senate, but also by a different senate run by a different party, which is the police, that then double checks these areas and, you know, says, hey, also from our side, you're good to go. Then you have to show certain metrics in this very small area, which we did in Bergedorf. And then once you have that, you define the next area. So you always have these dependencies of different parties basically senates, which can be run by different parties with maybe different focuses. And it's an iterative process, and you always have the dependency. So you're not that flexible in terms of growing that a service area, maybe also according to customer demands, and be flexible. And yeah, that was then the reason to say, okay, we need to show as a company that this can be a massive product and business, and not to reach that, we need to have regulatory kind of certainty to be able to grow that into a certain size that is big enough to be able to show kind of product market fit at a certain scale. And that's why we decided then to go to the US. Having said that, in parallel, there's big efforts from multiple industry partners, also from the OEM industry and others, to kind of regulate remote driving at scale. There's also this certain first drafts and news being produced about that. So, I'm excited. Hopefully we'll be able in the next months to be able to show the world also that you can scale in Germany. And with that, we would be, excited to come back. Maybe in a year to fully then commit in a big rollout of a city. Obviously, that would be very exciting and great to have also in Europe.
We would love to see you here. So one question, like you said, you now launch in the US. Can you also share a bit more insights what the difference actually is in terms of regulation? Like how easy was it to launch? Was it easy? Was it as kind of share a bit more insights, please, about the differences also in launching the service?
I mean, some people think that the US market is kind of regulated on a national level. That's not the case. So we also have state-based rules here. At least I can talk about the autonomous and remote driving regulation. So we decided to go to Nevada because it's actually regulated here. It's not, I think right now the draft is like 30 or 40 pages. So very well defined. In Germany here, the US, it's I think like the application is like 3 pages. You just have to you have to kind of apply without many requirements, right? Like you have to have insurance, you have to come to a safe stop and so forth, and then you're good to go here. So, it's just a bit less complex, the regulations here in Nevada. And then there's other states where it's not regulated, and everything that's not regulated is allowed, or let's say everything that's not prohibited is allowed. So big states like Texas, also in some areas, California, kind of that's their approach. And they are there and they say, hey, yeah, it's like remote driving is just normal driving. Just come here. We'd love to have you in a city. There's nothing you need. It's allowed basically today, or in other words, it's not prohibited today. So you can go until there's regulation that prohibits this. which we don't want to do. you can come here. So that's just a bit different. Obviously, it comes then with a downside that you have much more responsibility as a company when it comes to, you know, claims, when there might be issues with your technology. But in my opinion, that's the way to go, because you can just go out and you have it in your own hands. Obviously, also, we never would put anything on the streets that's not safe, because that can have very, very big impacts on us as a company. So, yeah, these are just the different approaches here in the US.
Wow, that's a big difference in terms of how fast you can launch something. I would like to move the conversation a bit more towards your operations and understand a bit better how you operate in general. Can you share, because I can imagine it's very complex actually to put such a whole complex system on the roads, as usually in autonomous driving, the challenge is most likely sensors, LiDAR, and all kind of these things. Now in comparison actually to your business with the teledriving, I would like to get there a bit more feedback from you. What's the biggest challenge technology-wise for you to solve? I suppose it's also keeping the driver always connected to the car with a lot of redundancy is a big challenge, and connectivity. So it would be interesting to hear more about that.
So first of all, there's a big difference when it comes to sensors of robo-taxis, kind of full level 4 autonomous driving and remote driving. Remote driving is a camera-based system, so we don't require LiDARs. We don't require, $150,000 of hardware setup to be added to our vehicles. It's very, very inexpensive. It can be in the low thousands, or even in the future, almost no additional hardware cost, because you can leverage the cameras that are already on the vehicles for driver assistance systems and so forth. So that's a big, a very, very big benefit of remote driving that then allows to potentially put this technology into all kind of vehicles that are being produced in the near future, right? Vans, trucks. We just announced a truck driver. Vans, private cars, obviously our use case that we've launched here in Las Vegas. So that's just something to keep in mind, that from a technology hardware perspective, that's a big difference to the, laser scanners, they're called LiDARs, that are on robo-taxis, the, 14 radars, the 16 cameras, depending on which autonomous driving company you look at. So that's a big advantage. From a technology perspective, how remote driving works, think about it that we know beforehand where we remotely drive, right? Meaning that we check the area where we drive based on connectivity, but also on speed limits and other safety factors, where we say, okay, in these areas, we can remotely drive. We can actually in Las Vegas already drive 25% of Las Vegas. So that's a very, very big area. That's twice the size of San Francisco. So it's very big, including on the strip where there's all the tourists and so forth. So we were able to kind of green light these areas, but it prevents us from going into areas where it's really, really, really bad connectivity connection, for example. So that's step one. And step two is that while you remotely drive, we have obviously our secret sauce of continuously optimizing the video streaming, right? To have very reliable and low latency video streaming. Remote driving works on 4G. We did have a partnership at the Mobile World Congress with Deutsche Telekom and Ericsson to leverage new features on 5G, which is obviously a great improvement, but that we don't necessarily need to launch. We're also driving on Starlink, which is exciting, for example. But we don't need 5G, and you also don't need Starlink to make this work. But as we remotely drive, we have a lot of optimization, sending redundant signals over redundant carriers. So we're using multiple connections and send the same video images over these different connections, for example, Vodafone and T-Mobile, and then we take the picture that comes first from any of these carriers and then discard the rest. And that was obviously many technical hurdles to overcome. And then it's important to know that if, many things are, if for example, all the networks are lost at the same time, that the vehicle itself can decide to come to a safe stop. So there's some, smart implementations of the vehicle that the vehicle can, can always safely stop in case there's a problem anywhere in the system. That's in a short nutshell kind of how that technology works. And we are very excited to see that it works now. Over the last year, we've done thousands of trips. And right now, it's more about rolling this out and scaling the technology. And the challenges that come with that, rather than having this initial hurdle to really show that the technology can work in a small scale, because that's what we were able to prove in the last year.
Out of curiosity, where are your drivers located and how do you select them?
So we have our remote driving center here in Las Vegas. We also already drove. It's kind of exciting. So obviously these remote drivers can then teleport into a car, north Las Vegas, south Las Vegas, you know, jump around Las Vegas, but they can also, and by jump, I mean kind of remotely join a car, right? But we've also already remotely driven a car from Las Vegas in Mountain View, for example, like in the Silicon Valley, or in Texas, right? So you're at this remote driving center here in Las Vegas, and then you just start a car, right? Or different vehicle type, you know, in another state, and that also works technically, which is very exciting. Our a main remote driving center is in Las Vegas. We also have one in Berlin, of course, but there it's not for commercial operations.
In terms of the whole set, like you were talking about the remote drivers and the setup, how far away can they be in general? So you mentioned a Mountain View, Las Vegas. Have you also tried US to Europe, or is it too far away?
No, but there are certain restrictions when it comes to speed of light. Right. So think about that. You could potentially do that technically from the same continent. Right. So Germany to the US would just have too much latency. And we can't technically improve that because you can't increase the speed of light. In between states where you can leverage maybe where remote drivers live. Right. Or you say, hey, I don't want to have the remote driving center in downtown Los Angeles or downtown New York, but I actually want to have it more in, maybe not in New York, but in Pennsylvania, where there's more remote drivers available, that is definitely technically possible.
Cool. Sounds very interesting. So in terms of the whole operations that you have, can you explain a bit better also your business model? So you mentioned that you started in Las Vegas now with the delivery of car rentals. So you're kind of competing with traditional rental car with at-home delivery. What's your vision? You also mentioned the trucks and the truck driving. So how do you see yourself? Is it going to be a B2C brand or a B2B technology?
Yes. So we are fully focused on launching our B2C brand here. And what we're driven by is to really be an alternative to private car ownership in cities, right? And really create sustainable and livable cities here. And we will do everything we can to, you know, fulfill that vision. We have kind of started with our driverless car sharing mobility category. We believe that can be massive, really, really big, right? Because of the low price point, we believe that can be, you know, 2, 3, 4x the size of ride hailing, right? Because of the low price point. So I don't really usually compare us to car rental or car sharing, because these are markets that are quite small, relatively small, compared to ride hailing. We're going more at trips that are more the length of ride hailing, sometimes 2-hour trips, sometimes 3-hour trips, sometimes going more to the 1-day trips, which are car rentals, but that doesn't happen that often. We really see a massive opportunity, kind of on that new mobility category to get people from A to B in cities, which we want to now continue to launch or roll out in Las Vegas and then expand into different cities. On the backbone of that, we saw a lot of kind of partnership interest with trucks, you know, privately owned vehicles as a massive, massive opportunity. Think about your own car where you can then check, okay, I want it to be remote drivable, right? At basically no additional hardware costs, because you don't need any new hardware on the vehicle because they already have the cameras, and you can get, you know, your kids driven to school and then, you know, with a remote driver, or the car parks for you, or the car drives you home after you had a few glasses to drink at the party. There's massive B2B opportunities that we started to explore kind of on the backbone of the success that we saw here now in our B2C offering. And we'll continue to expand that, but our main focus is kind of our B2C kind of driverless car sharing mobility category that we've launched here, and that we're now in the midst of scaling.
So you mentioned a couple of partnerships that you're looking into in the B2B sector. I've read something about Peugeot. I've heard a lot about now more and more autonomous companies like Waymo, but also Tesla announced that they will rely on teledriving in the beginning. Mm-hmm. So it would be really, really interesting how you see kind of this whole development also in the autonomous driving sector and how it also influences your company strategy and the partnerships you're making.
Yeah. I think on the Peugeot side, we had an announcement with Peugeot last year at VivaTech together with CEO of Peugeot, where they'd love to put this remote driving into private vehicles, which, you know, I believe is just such an exciting opportunity to create revenue after you sold the vehicles. And then you have, as I explained earlier, these on-demand chauffeur drivers or valet drivers, you know, or that drive the car to maintenance and change your winter tires and, you know. We announced that together with Peugeot, and they also are very keen to add it into vans, delivery vans for like Amazon type deliveries, and because there's some very big efficiency gains. They have a lot of downtimes during loading and unloading, and a few other significantly efficiency gains. There's also this big category for us, which is called assisted autonomy. That's exactly what you were talking about, Waymo and other players. Also, Elon Musk announced that he was going to do remote driving now, which obviously is great for us. What that means is that, you know, many people might not know, but Waymo, they haven't released official numbers, it can be around like 5% of the time that a human actually remotely intervenes. So Waymo doesn't do remote driving, but they actually do remote guidance. So they tell a vehicle when it's stuck, okay, back up, and then they draw waypoints, and then they guide the autonomous vehicle, and then the autonomous vehicle follows these paths, right? And then to, you know, kind of go around a double parked vehicle or solve a certain tricky situation. And they do that quite often. Also crews, before they shut down, they release statistics that every 2.5 miles, there's a human, overseeing. So they have a lot of kind of humans in the loop through remote guidance. And then there's now Elon who said, okay, actually, I'm not going to do remote guidance. I'm going to go also straight to remote driving to also help their Teslas if they get stuck. But from my perspective, he said it's going to be the usual 2.5 or 3 years out before he launches a robotaxi. So from my perspective, that will, there's still, I would say, some uncertainties in particular from a technical and safety side if and when he launches. But for sure, he also will have remote driving that is kind of assisting the autonomy we also now have very difficult conversation with autonomous driving players to say, okay, can we help them launch and get them to market faster, and then there's certain things that they can do more easily autonomously, and then the other parts, the more difficult ones, would be done by a remote driver.
Cool. Can you share us more about your vision actually of this whole market? So how do you see kind of this difference between autonomous driving and driverless technology, and when do you think really there will be, like, will there be actually a point reached where it's only autonomous driving, or will it always be a combination of people driving, autonomous driving, remote driving to the people, and so on?
Yeah, no, I'm a big optimist. I worked in autonomous driving. I definitely see a future where we'll have autonomous vehicles, maybe in 20 years, with most of the time being autonomous. Question is, how do we get there, right? And when we said we are pursuing a contrarian approach, right, is that we are saying, hey, we can launch something with just humans, you know, and have massive benefits for us as a society and to customers. And then how we see the world is that over time, there will be less and less humans and more and more autonomy. So it's kind of a gradual rollout of autonomous driving features, which is very different from, you know, the current approach of the Waymos, where you say, okay, we have 100% humans and then we have zero humans, right? Which is also societal and, you know, from unions, it's not so easy to do, right? Let alone from a technology perspective, you need all these $150,000 LiDARs, and there's big question marks whether this works from a technical as well as commercial perspective. Actually, I don't know if you've seen, but McKinsey just published a survey, I think 3 days ago, where they said a mile costs a robotaxi $8.16 per mile traveled, $8. So there's like 2 to 3x the cost of an Uber, right? So extremely expensive because of the sensor cost and so forth. So there's question marks from a technology, but also from a commercial perspective, if that path is the right way. And what we're saying, okay, let's start something that is 100% human, and then based on remote driving data. So from this data, you can actually collect a lot of data, which can train your algorithms. And you can split up the autonomy problem to saying, okay, let's not actually go from 0 to 100 autonomy, but maybe start with simpler features like highways going straight that you can then automate. And then the more complicated urban intersections and protected turns you would still do through a remote driver. So you have this very nice transition over the next 20 years where some things would be done by a human, some things would be done by autonomy. And then in the end, you kind of get to 100% autonomy. Have this kind of gradual rollout over the next years. This is how we see, this autonomous kind of vehicle race play out. And it's just very exciting to be part of that and have this very contrarian approach compared to all the other players in the market.
Cool. Where are we going to see your service in the next 5 years in Europe?
I'd love to, launch various cities. I'd also love to launch, private vehicles and all these other use cases. We are in Germany, so we'd love to roll out Hamburg, Berlin. We know Bavaria and other cities are also very interested in having our service there because it can add to sustainability and, to on-demand electric mobility solutions. Germany is a big part. We have actually quite a few French investors, all right, and Swedish investors, great ones. So France, Sweden, UK is also very supportive of, remote driving. We would go where it makes sense from a business perspective, but more importantly, we have regulatory clarity it looks good that we would get that very soon in Germany, and then with that regulation one country would apply that in different countries, and that's usually how it works. Hopefully various number of cities in Europe in the next 5 years as well.
Cool. You're talking about Germany, I need to ask, what's the maximum speed you can drive remotely on a German highway?
So we are focused our remote driving efforts now on urban streets, right? So we don't remotely drive on highways. That has a certain reasons. Just on highways, it's a different safety case, our technology for our business case that we have, we don't require driving highways. So the customer, of course, can drive highways, but we just bring the cars and we park the cars and. We don't need to drive highways to kind of bring cars to customers nor go over highways when we park the car. We're focused right now on urban driving. We're working on highway driving, of course. Once it's ready, we would announce that. That would benefit us in certain parts, but it's not a absolute must have to roll this technology out at scale with many benefits.
Yeah. Okay. Before we come to my last quick questions to the end, there's one thing I just want also to say. It's really interesting also in terms of your approach, because I don't only see the urban area that you can cover very well with this approach, but also we have this huge topic in Europe with the countryside, where car sharing and other new mobility innovations could not really serve the countryside because it just didn't pay off to have obviously cars there. And with delivering the car in front of the door, even in areas where it's not at all covered, it's really interesting.
It's really cool. Absolutely, right? So in general, car sharing, I'm not sure if everyone is aware, it's not an easy market. It's actually, from a business perspective, very, very difficult. Nobody has really figured out to do this very profitable and being able to scale. It's almost, I wouldn't say a pure German phenomenon, but there's not many car sharing companies outside of Germany. There's a little bit with Zipcar in the UK, but obviously in the US, they completely scaled back. And it's just... It's very difficult to make this work profitably. And in order to reach, a good business that if it works today, which there's different views whether it works in some cities or not, and whether you can do that profitable, but you want to do that only in very dense areas because then you have to put less cars. you have more demand, and then people, you have to have a car within 300 meters to walk to it, right? So that it works. So to your point, it doesn't work anywhere in, you know, more suburban areas. And you're completely right, right? By being able to remotely drive vehicles, we need much, much, much less vehicles to create a better experience. So that means if you're in the suburban area, you might not get the car within 5 minutes, but maybe 10, right? But still, it's a fantastic customer experience. Because for a car share, you would never walk, you know, 3 kilometers through a car or something like that, right? So you need less cars, still have a very good customer experience and also a good business model, because these vehicles are being used much more than traditional car sharing, right? Because we remotely drive, and then these cars would be utilized much more. So less parking cost, less insurance cost, less maintenance cost, and so forth. So from a business perspective, these models work also in suburban areas, or that's at least what we project. And there's also in these areas in particular interest from cities. How can I provide on-demand mobility solutions for people that live in these suburban areas, because maybe they want to go to the train station that connects them with a city center, or maybe there's just a very, very bad, you know, public transport connection to go back to the city center, in this case maybe of Hamburg, and then go out of the city center, kind of the star transportation set up for public transport. So you could go between these stars and branches basically very, very, very fast and easily. That's a big advantage of kind of this driverless car sharing that would also work in suburban areas where traditional car sharing wouldn't work.
And that was always for us such a big driver, because in the end, what do people want? If they need the car, they want to have it in front of the door at the moment they need it. And that was always this balancing convenience, like you said. So if I'm on the countryside, most of the suburban area, mostly station-based car sharing makes sense. So I always need to walk to the next station and bring it back to the station. So I have a convenience cutback. And if I'm looking into free-floating, where I do have a good coverage all over the city, I still need sometimes to walk to the car. And this is why there is this home delivery feature. And I really like that you're solving also this issue, operational issue, where there are this high cost to deliver the car, and you can increase the convenience for every single user out there, that they can really get rid of their car, but still know if they need it, it will be in front of their door, which is great. Yeah. It's really interesting. Perfect. I think we need to do something together.
Great. Sounds great.
Probably to the end, to wrap up everything, it was really like a pleasant conversation with a lot of insights. To the end, one very short question with hopefully that you can answer to myself. When do you think we will have more driverless cars in Germany than in US?
More like from an absolute perspective?
From a
percentage wise, yeah. I mean, I don't want to say never, but I don't see how we would be able to catch up. I mean, it is,
big gap.
I don't know if people know, right? But we are so far behind from autonomous driving.
Yeah.
It's very, very, very scary.
Yeah.
Right?
It is.
So we have to do something. Maybe we can help with remote driving. There's other companies also. So that's a different approach. So maybe we can really now... Maybe, I mean, leapfrog is a bit, but just a different approach right now in autonomous driving. We're just, I mean, you can't even say we're 4 years behind, because in my opinion, there's nothing even 4 years behind, because we don't have these companies with these technical capabilities that we have in the US and China. I'm not aware that anyone wants to come to Europe, because it's just at this point, you know, there's so big markets to roll out here in the US. And if the technology now works, and you don't have all these regulatory challenges, so having more driverless cars in Germany than in the US percentage-wise, it's hard for me to see that ever happens. But let's see.
Let's hope for the best.
Exactly.
Good, Thomas. Thank you very much for coming to us and joining us today in the podcast. It was really an interesting episode, and I'm really looking forward to see what they will have, like how it will continue to bring also this technology of driverless cars here to Europe, but also to the US.
Awesome. Well, thanks for having me, and have a great day.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.